preliminary technical study. Every mention of this study in prior announcements included the word feasibility. It's almost always referred to as going to be a pre-feasibility study, and they come out today, you do a control F in the announcement, no mention of the word feasibility. So, g'day money miners. 21st of June. Mate, only 9 days away from the end of the financial year.
We are. Bit of tax loss selling we might be seeing, but we'll get into that at a later date.
There is a bit, isn't there? We haven't been able to get through to the big fella today. Matty Michael, we've been trying to call him in. We're going to try and get a call in to play for the Money Miners as an update, but it might have to be at the end of the episode rather than at the front end today, yeah, JD.
I'm sure we're in his thoughts at the moment.
Absolutely. Mate, what companies are we talking about today? What have we got out there?
So I think we're going to cover four today, and we're going to be on a bit of a range. We're going to start with Rio Tinto, the behemoth, and then Adriatic we're going to mention. I guess we're going to talk about the gold saga finally coming to an end, and that's a few different companies, obviously. We're talking about Silver Lake, Genesis and St. Barbara, that saga wrapping up. And there's one more we're going to talk about today, Sayona. Yeah. Oh. So bit of a following that one has, so I might be keenly tuning in to hear what you have to say. So why don't we get into it?
You know what I noticed, JD?
Tell me.
I noticed a friend of the show, Mr. Wayne Bramwell, MD there at Westgold. He's looks like he's pretty busy tonight. He's doing the CEO sleep out for Vinny's. Did you see this one?
I did. Pretty awesome cause. Pretty wild weather to be sleeping out in as well, I might say, and probably worth a shout out. There are a few other people around the mining industry. I think I saw a few other colleagues of his at Westgold.
Yep, there's a whole Westgold team there. So yep. Wayne's joined by Tim Cook, not Apple's CEO. He's in fact Westgold's compliance manager and geologist Sylvia Gamara. Good on the both of you for joining your CEO. It's called CEO Sleep Out, but yeah, he's got the team around him.
Yeah, love it. And David Sun, MD of Sino Steel, also in the mining industry, getting involved, as well as Mark Rustin, the CEO of Bowen Coking Coal.
Bowen Coking Coal.
Yeah, so good on all of them. And we'll chuck a link in the show notes if anyone wants to sort of get in touch or support the cause as well.
Yep, mate. I looked at the donations page as well for the Westgold. And what you saw there at the top of the donations page, a CEO of another mining company himself, Mr. Stewie Tonkin, CEO of Northern Star, with the biggest contribution to Wayne. So good on you, Stewie. I'm sure you wish you were doing the sleep out yourself, but I'm sure that Vinny's appreciate the $5,000 donation.
Yeah, good stuff. Alrighty. Rio Tinto, let's start at the big end of town. So they've announced a $500 million US dollar investment in Kennecott, which is also known as Bingham Canyon. So for those unaware, this is just a magnificent hole in the ground, isn't it, Trav? It's in Utah near Salt Lake City.
Mate, I'm blown away looking at the photos of it.
Yeah, incredible. What I was telling you earlier off the camera, I bought the old man a book, a coffee table book, The World of Mining, and this mine is actually on the front cover, and it's just ginormous, fabulous. It's quite high up as well, so they get a bit of snow, and it just looks pretty marvellous. It was first discovered around 1850.
Wow. And deep history.
Yeah, and the proper scale open pit mining started in the early 1900s. So it's been operating for quite a while. If anyone's seen mines like Escondida in South America, it looks kind of similar. It's
like this giant pit sunken in within a mountain range. And it almost looks like, you know, the mine itself is a part of that mountain range. It's honestly stunning.
Yeah, it's a huge porphyry thing. Obviously copper, what we're talking about, they're mining, but they're also getting a fair bit of gold, silver, molybdenum and tellurium. So let's get into the investment. So obviously we just discussed a huge open pit, but what they've actually invested in is the underground aspect of this mine. So the money's going to go toward underground development and infrastructure. So Rio Tinto, obviously notoriously hard to get costs on a sort of per mine basis, as you'd know. So they come out with their ginormous annual reports, but actually trying to find out what the cost to produce a pound or a ton of copper is pretty hard. But we managed to draw a bit of data from S&P Capital IQ, and what we learned is that it's a pretty high cost operation. So the chart shows that the cash costs is $2.97 per pound. And just for reference, the current copper price is $3.88. So it's not a huge margin there. And you need to bear in mind that the cash cost we just mentioned is, of course, the direct mining cost. So, you know, your labor, your trucks and all those sorts of things into mining. It doesn't include things like CapEx, your exploration, corporate costs or anything like that. So it's a relatively sort of low margin operation that they're running there. And the $500 million US is going to go towards the North Rim Skarn, which is going to produce what they say is 250,000 tonnes of copper over the next 10 years.
So about 25,000 tonnes of copper per year?
Exactly. And that's over the next 10 years starting next year. So like you said, 25,000 tonnes of copper, back of the envelope at US $9,000 a tonne. Is going to get you revenue of $225 million. And
that's about $4 a pound copper price versus...
Exactly, a touch over $4 a pound copper. It's pretty hard to even do a back of an envelope type of analysis here because, like we said, they've got pretty high cash costs, but that's at the open pit. Now, that's mining 0.38% copper, as you sort of expect with these ginormous porphyry systems that have just declined in grade.
It's low grade.
Super, super low grade. It's something
where... 0.38.
0.38. So that's what we see with a lot of the porphyry systems all through the Andes. They're getting lower and lower grade as sort of time goes on. But the ore reserve and resource statement that came out a little while ago at Rio for the underground portion is at 3%. So you'd have to imagine that the cash costs for the underground portion that they're developing here is just going to be way, way lower so they can do that at an economic price and, you know, make money from the copper. But it does make me think of one sort of key takeaway. Whatever back of the envelope type analysis you do, Rio Tinto is surely factoring in a higher future copper price.
They're not using the $4 long-term price.
I just can't imagine that they're using $4 a pound US long-term. Like we said, you know, almost $3 cash cost. This is obviously a $500 million investment, but you don't have to look too far into the history at Kennecott. And there's another $120 million investment here, another $200 million CapEx investment there. They're putting a lot of money toward this, so they clearly think that there is a bright future in copper.
I like it, JD. I think, I mean, copper price, it's prices are set at the margin, right? And what happens in a recession is demand for... The copper usually falls off, Dr. Copper it's called, because it aligns with the economic output. But, you know, then you've got the whole supply story, and I think that's a long-term outlook. But, you know, if what Rio's doing here, it looks like they're going to be building, like doing this development in what might be an undervalued copper market and then reaping the reward in a more buoyant copper price environment. So
absolutely. It looks like they're taking that longer-term view, which a company like Rio Tinto can afford to do.
Nice work, mate. Well, let's talk about the Leonora story, mate. This is I'm so excited to be talking about this one again.
It's the last time we're going to talk about it, so we're going to make it special.
You missed out on the conversations for so long, JD. We had so much drama when you were away.
Don't worry, mate. I was following it.
So, I became a St. Barbara shareholder. I bloody forgot about the vote. Can you believe?
After all that, I can't quite believe it. So what's happened? What's going on here?
St. Barbara shareholders, excluding myself, they voted. There was a vote yesterday on the Leonora sale. And what we saw was that shareholders, they voted for the Leonora sale. So 77% of shareholders voted in favour of the deal. So that deal is approved by shareholders. It's not a surprising outcome, right? You know, just given where everything got to, unfortunately, Silver Lake's deal, it was prohibited from being converted into a binding deal before this vote date because the St. Barbara board didn't allow them to conduct DD. So, you know, there was real deal risk involved if you voted no here and if it didn't carry. But it's, you know, it's kind of fascinating still nonetheless. And I've got a bit of a question for you, JD. Now that it looks like this deal is over, it looks like, you know, Leonora's going to rally. And I just got some questions for you, given the whole love story and how it all panned out. Like, who are the winners and who are the losers from this? I'm thinking St. Barbara, Genesis and Silver Lake.
It's a good question. So I might start by avoiding your question and saying that I'm super excited to see what Genesis and the team are going to do here. So Gwalia is obviously in super capable hands now. And, you know, the Gwalia Gold Mine is a historic asset. It's had a lot of history in the WA gold community. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what Raleigh and the team can do here. And to answer your question a bit more directly, I can't help but think the St. Barbara board aren't coming away from this looking too great. So
no.
You touched on 77% approval for this to go through. That's not a great score, you know. That's that's nothing too stellar, nothing to write home about. But on top of that, you had three of the top 20 shareholders, so combined owning a fair, you know, slab of stock, being vocal in the media about their sort of dissatisfaction with what the board's doing and their unhappiness at this deal. So that'd be my takeaways. And they've got a, once of course the Genesis shares are distributed to the shareholders and it's all said and done, they've got a bit of work to do to sort of win back favour with their long-term shareholders there.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Genesis, right? Are they a winner? I mean, like they've ultimately recut a deal in a more favourable way, and they've picked up Leonora without an auction. Ultimately, they only really had to just bring forward some contingent consideration. So, you know, they got what they really wanted at what appears to be a pretty damn reasonable price, given someone else was willing to pay more for it, but they just weren't allowed in. So I think they're probably a winner, all things said and done.
Yeah, agreed. I don't think, you know, it never really got to a crazy bidding war in the end. So I think Raleigh and team can be relatively happy, and now it's just time to get to work for them.
Which leaves Silver Lake. And I think the question mark about whether Silver Lake is a winner or a loser is sort of an open-ended question here, because we actually saw a bit of speculation in the media today, JD, about whether or not Silver Lake is going to be continuing to look for opportunities via M&A in an active way. So Bridget Carter at the AFR, she puts out an article today, I believe, basically speculating that Silver Lake's taking a look at both Gascoyne and Pantoro. And I'm pretty keen to talk to you about both of these opportunities with the lens that that I have on the WA gold sector.
Yeah, let's do it. I think, you know, straight off the bat, the answer is that they very well could be on the market for more assets. They weren't, you know, attracted to Gwalia with an incredibly cheap bid that they chucked in. So that gives you the impression that they might have answers to fill and that they're still on the market for another asset.
Mm. So, before we talk about Gascoyne, mate, I think you've got some shares, so you better bloody put in a disc.
Yeah, got to disclose, did pick up a few Gascoyne shares. So ding, ding, ding.
Yeah,
ding, now, ding, ding. We'll let you talk more about them. What are your thoughts?
Gascoyne, does it fit Silver Lake? So they look cheap, right? I mean, that's why you bought shares, but they are $150 million market cap right now. There's a new ish mill there, a new exciting discovery in Never Never being drilled out, which looks pretty promising. Everyone that's ever touched Gascoyne has been torched, right? Hence the cheap valuation right now, and that's the opportunity just from a valuation perspective. The clean balance sheet, you know, there's no apparent operational synergies in my mind between Dalgaranga and, I mean, Deflector's not too far away, but you can't really make a case of milling anything in my mind. And you know, but there are kind of some that you'd have the ability to leverage Silver Lake's expertise. It's going to be Never Never's going to be underground. Silver Lake notorious underground miners. But I think for Silver Lake to go down that pathway of Gascoyne, they'd have to pay a pretty serious premium to get a deal done there, given the shareholder dynamics. You've got Tembo sitting there with 20%, and Delphi, they're massively underwater. You know, with a blocking stake themselves. So it's just going to be one of those ones that if you want the asset, you'd have to pay a substantial premium for it. But it is like cheap just in terms of market cap valuation right now. And so like I also think with Gascoyne, like Gascoyne would be much more attractive if you could pair it up with something else regionally as well to fill that mill.
Agreed. So obviously the sort of elephant in the room is the big blocking stakes that those major shareholders have. And, you know, it does screen pretty cheap. Obviously that's why I bought a couple of shares. So to answer that question regarding the big shareholders, you know, though the answer from Silver Lake's perspective is quite straightforward. A premium sort of settles that, and, you know, yet to be seen what a premium might look like if they are interested in that asset. But given that they offered 700 odd million for Gwalia, there is perhaps a bit of wiggle room. And from memory, they had between 250 and 300 million in cash on the books as it stands now. So it might be worth mentioning what Gascoigne's strategy was, given that the mill went on care and maintenance earlier this year. So we brought on Simon Lawson a month or so ago, and he really talked us through his strategy and what their plan is. So they've got that really exciting Never Never deposit, which they're just going to drill out. And I think the earliest we'll see them mining again would be late last year. That was the indication he'd sort of given. So roughly 300,000 ounces at the moment at Never Never, and they're just churning away, poking lots of holes in and trying to delineate that into something a whole lot bigger than that. On your point on the consolidation and, you know, potentially pairing that up with other assets, I think it's just, again, worth mentioning Murchison area is sort of in play. You guys spoke about Westgold having a go at Musgrave, so there seems to be a few different things going on at the moment there, but they'll just have to make their start with one first if they're interested.
Mm. Then the other one that Bridget Carter puts in this article is Pantoro. And Pantoro is an interesting one, right? So can I just say, like, that article in The Australian, it looked to be pretty lazy reporting, JD, because they talk about Pantoro in isolation as an opportunity, ignoring the fact that come 30 June, Pantoro's merger with Tullow becomes effective. So, you know, what they talk about their asset ownership and et cetera and market cap is not accurate if you're actually talking about the real opportunity to acquire Pantoro. But like nonetheless, it's a distressed situation, right? So Pantoro, they're having ramp up issues. It's like unclear in the market right now if they're actually going to eventually need to raise more money or not to get through to a positive cash flow situation. Silver Lake's balance sheet in such a situation could kind of help in that dynamic. It's like Norseman is this high grade narrow vein mining, and I think, you know, like Silver Lake do have expertise in underground narrow mining situations, but it's a real combination of open pit and underground. I think the open pits actually dominate the early mining happening there, so I think I think it's an opportunity that you would look at, but it would all hinge on the outcomes of technical DD on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So straight up, that 200 million number was kind of wrong in a sense. And on your point to the cash flow nature of the business, they announced some sort of financing earlier this week.
They refinanced the debt. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So there was some terms in there that gave us the sort of indication that the business might be cash flow positive in you know, a bit down the track. So was only interest payments, I think, for the first year before principal needs to be repaid. Mm. And like we touched on at the time, that kind of gives you the indication that they don't have the capacity to pay back principal to start with.
Who knows? Yeah, it might not work out that way.
Yeah. And like you said, Silver Lake sort of prides themselves on their underground mining ability, but maybe we end up eating our words. We didn't really see I didn't see the Gwalia bid coming in either. So we'll have to sort of wait and see what they do.
Yeah. So these are the two companies that Bridget Carter talks about as opportunities for Silver Lake. JD, I want to talk to you about two other opportunities not mentioned in this article that I think are, you know, perhaps worthy of talking about as real opportunities as well for Silver Lake if they are M&A hungry. Number one of those is Red 5, right? So Red 5, like Silver Lake appeared to have some interest in the Leonora consolidation play as evidenced via their interest in Gwalia. Red 5 is, you know, front and center of what's next. In my mind, they've got this giant mill. We had Mark Williams on a few Fridays ago who basically said that, you know, they're cash flow positive now, in more words or less. And so it looks like the worst might be over there. And if Silver Lake can get their hands on Red 5, then they're in a much more favorable position to be part of any ultimate sort of Leonora consolidation, if that's what their ambitions were in all of this. So yeah, that's, I think for me, that's an interesting one that we should think about.
Yeah, absolutely. And from a Red shareholder perspective, you know, you really hope they have turned the corner, and I'm not too sure they'd be quick to turn down a premium if someone were to come in for them.
JD, I've got one more left field idea here, and it's another one that you bloody own shares in, so you're going to have to do another ding, ding, ding.
That's it, just a paltry amount, but nevertheless.
Yeah, it's this is Medallion Metals, right? So bear with me here, $20 million enterprise value, which might just seem a bit laughable for a growth opportunity for Silver Lake. But
well, I'm a bit confused because Maddie laid out the strategy to us that Barrick Gold was going to come in and that they were going to buy First Quantum for $25 billion. And then Medallion was going to get swept up. So what's your sort of plan here?
Well, Ravensthorpe, right, it actually, which is their undeveloped gold project, Ravensthorpe actually used to be a Silver Lake asset, you know, back in the day. And in Silver Lake's announcements back when they owned it, they would refer to it as a future third mining hub, but they had competing priorities. They ended up selling it to ACH Minerals, which became Medallion Metals when they ultimately listed on ASX. But Ravensthorpe, it's a bit of an asset that it constantly gets compared to Deflector. So, you know, Deflector was always sort of seen as a bit of a hard asset and it required a bit of processing nous. There were some questions around MET, very like similar to some of the things that Medallion has to answer in the marketplace. And Medallion are always sort of pointing to the Deflector analog when they talk about Ravensthorpe to address some of those questions. So Silver Lake have the credibility to operate Deflector. They've done that well and they've made money from that asset in a way that people probably didn't always expect, right? So I think like Ravensthorpe, if it was desirable from Silver Lake to acquire it, if they had a favourable view on developing and processing there, then it could be the sort of asset that you pick up for not much. And the market almost immediately ascribes a lot of value to it. I'm thinking of when Capricorn paid $20 million for Mount Gibson. It didn't take long at all before the broker reports started popping up with a mining plan around that being their growth story. And there was just $600 million of value that just popped up out of nowhere, right? So
yeah.
You could see how that could happen.
Yeah, agreed. I think the thinking is good on Medallion and it does look cheap, although you can take my words with a pinch of salt. They are in a bit of a tough spot at the moment, cash-wise, just like the majority of, you know, explorers and developers out there at the moment. But and on Capricorn, you're dead right. And you just sort of marry that cheap price that they acquired Mount Gibson for with the belief that the market has in their ability to execute, develop the asset and start producing gold from it. And you get a sort of lot of really value accretive deal, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Ravensthorpe, it's 1.6 million ounces at 2.6 grams per tonne. And it's an underground ore body. It's there and thereabouts. If Silver Lake just were confident that they could develop it and they took a view on that, I think the market would believe their capability. And there's your growth story. And we talked about it, you know, looking really cheap right now. It's that cheap that, you know, we've seen twice in the last week the MD Paul Bennett buying shares on market there.
Yeah, agreed. Mid-caps need ounces. I think that's one of the takeaways that we're going to keep talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mate, Maddie's calling us. What's going on here?
Let's patch him in.
What? Oh, he finally bloody replies to us. He must have a... All right, we'll answer his call.
We're on. Sorry, boys. I've got a bit sidetracked. Wheeling and dealing. Check out the suit. New South Wales Coles.
Oh, mate.
What do you reckon?
How did they go last night? I didn't actually catch the game.
It's tonight, you dickhead.
Oh.
You haven't played yet.
Oh, I thought you were celebrating.
Speaking of bloody dickheads, just got abused by a PMAC bloody top 20 shareholder. So the legacy of you two grilling the fuck out of them and me out in public as a sacrificial goat lives on. So,
hey, what he's got to be angry about? He's a top 20 shareholder of a bloody $3 billion company. He should just be sinking his beer and having a good time.
Any press is good press, mate.
I've been abused by about three of the top 20 or something, so I've got 17 to go, and after that, I should be in the clear. What's going on, boys?
Oh, mate, we were actually just mid-recording, and you've dialed in. I don't know if we play you mid-episode now. We might have to do that.
Yeah, why be not? Go mid-episode, I reckon, bloody, and watch that frame in a day. Bloody, you leave one day, and you're bloody Brad, you're in bloody half your head's out the fucking window and bloody, no, I've got to keep me. I was on the plane watching myself. It was the weirdest thing ever. I looked like a complete dickhead.
Mate, you look very different to normal. You're wearing a suit. I thought your like the way you were bloody looking would decline each day, but now you've actually dressed up versus yesterday.
No, I'm coming in hot and I'm detoxing off the vape.
With a pint.
Getting a bit punchy.
Yeah, no, well, I will tell a lie. I actually found one in the front of my bag and it had about, and if you leave them for a while, it ran out, but I actually, there was 6 puffs left in it. So I sucked the living shit out of that.
Oh, and mate.
So I've re-quit again. So I've quit again for 6 hours. So,
Matty, the real question is, how did we go on the intro yesterday?
Fucking hopeless. Bloody shit house.
It's righto that you say. I was right. I listened back to them. I was right. Mate, you always start with righto.
You've got to go. It's like bloody rugby league, mate. If you go half-assed into a tackle, you're going to get absolutely smashed. You've got to go all in. You cannot, none of this bloody, you've got to put your whole body, emotion, you've pretty much got to put your family on the line to do a Money of Mine intro each day. That's what I do, Money Miners. It's on the line every day.
Let's hope the Blues do that for you tonight, mate. I've got my fingers crossed. You got any word on the decline from over east? What's been happening?
Ooh. Tell you what, there's I will say there's mixed thoughts on what this July 1st is going to mean to companies. Mm. Some companies think, depending on their jurisdiction, they're like, "Nah, we're actually in a pretty good spot." Yada yada. Then the other companies are like, "Well, once this comes in, it's going to be." Everything's going to be a bit of a standstill, but yes, because this is a gold series event, so it's very gold focused. But a lot of the companies have got similar stories. Astral was one of them, and then you've got Alto presented as well, AME. So they're not in it, not distinctive. It could be. Look, will Remelius look to buy them and take it to? Mount Magnet or Westgold are now looking at Musgrave. So that was one. And then you had Catalyst. So they're merging with Superior Gold. So that looks pretty interesting with the plutonic belt expiration wise. But interesting thing about Alto, I've seen that in that sandstone area, if you put a map up of all the exploration that is done below 200 meters depth, pretty much nothing. Bugger all.
Yeah, so
there's a lot of open pit resources, but not much depth underground.
If you ever look at the production profile that came out of Troy Resources, who used to have the sandstone mill there, it was nothing flash. Like, yeah, it didn't knock the lights out there. So I'm always a bit hesitant to buy the sandstone story. What Alto have looks good. Don't get me wrong, but
it's exploration potential. You can't buy it on a story at the moment. It's like. It's like gas. Look at Gascoigne, bloody nearly ended up being what it was. In administration, avoided it, and then found one of the most exciting things deposits going around for the gold market. So, I think every and again the vibe I'm getting is there's so many companies with the prevailing market that the difficulty to raise capital at the moment. A lot of companies are just sitting still a bit. And while you're sitting still, you're just going backwards and eroding shareholder money. So, and they're just going further and further down in price. So,
Keeney saying that markets would settle on.
You wouldn't believe that all the MDs here that presented today think gold is going to the moon. You wouldn't have picked that.
Really?
They think gold is going to the moon. I couldn't believe it. MDs of a gold company were bullish on gold.
I love it, mate.
But he nearly fell off the chair.
All right, mate, we've got a crisp episode to put out today, so we better cut you off. Go the Blues.
Go the Blues. Hopefully I don't have a black eye tomorrow because I'm going to a real men's pub and I'm going to get a bit vocal. I'm probably going to chuck my hoodie on, take my suit off so I don't look like a dickhead.
If you want to avoid a black eye, stay away from the PMET shareholders.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Cheers, dickheads. Bloody God. Fucking sacrificial goat. Righto. Boys, take care of yourselves. Miss yous.
Miss you, mate.
Miss you, mate.
I don't even know if you... I'm pretty dribbling drunk shit, so I don't know if any of that was relevant. But,
look after yourself, mate. We'll call you in tomorrow again, hey?
Hey, and remember, like, do you want me to do the intro
while I'm waiting? Give it one. Come on.
This is how you got it. It's like, good day, money miners. What's the, buddy? I can't 21st.
G'day, 21st of June.
21st of June, and Jesus Christ, it is all happening in the bloody mining space today. We have got dot, dot, dot.
Very good.
Well done, Matty Michael.
Trav's turn today, so.
We'll see if I can match it. I already did it, so you called buddy mid-episode, so I can't redo it now.
Yeah. Right.
All right, heard a room, mate.
Boys.
Oh, geez, mate. He's doing all right, isn't he? He's getting across the scene.
Yep, putting himself out there, doing the BD, doing the hard yards, drinking all the beer for us, hey?
I don't know what the PMET shareholders are doing at a gold event. I would have thought they'd be at the lithium event.
You're too right. And speaking of lithium, Sayona.
Sayona.
They had news out today. So a preliminary technical study. You dive deep into this one. What's going on there?
Yeah, the market was expecting this one. It's been expecting it for a while. They've been pretty quiet about it. But they've come out with a preliminary technical study on adding a lithium carbonate plant at their North American lithium project in Quebec. I found the wording very interesting, JD.
Yeah, is that a feasibility type study, pre-feasibility? What can we sort of relate that to?
Preliminary technical study. It doesn't quite feel like it meets the standard of a feasibility or pre-feas study, right, in my mind. And every mention of this study in prior announcements included the word feasibility. It's almost always referred to as going to be a pre-feasibility study, and they come out today, you do a control F in the announcement, no mention of the word feasibility. So I just find that interesting, right? Like yeah. The ASX, I think it's pretty stringent about the use of that words on use of that word in a study that might not be up to scratch. So
interesting. And it's not like a mine plan and so on that they're putting the study out for. It's to get the carbonate facility, the processing plant, up and running again, right?
Correct, yeah. The study basically looks at restarting the lithium carbonate plant at North American Lithium Project there. Some giant numbers in this study, mate. Like NPV, $3.2 billion is the headline number, right? But importantly, it's only a 9-page announcement. So, like, it's not like there's a full, like, you know, 70, 80-page study here. You can't read this announcement and look at all the assumptions and see if what they're modeling here is actually reasonable or not. And given that, I'm actually not all that interested in talking about the numbers in the announcement at all. Like, how can you hold them with weight if you don't really have any ability to verify their reasonableness?
Yeah, fair enough. So why don't we just sort of zoom out a bit? I know we've spoken about Sayona once or twice before, but you've got a bit of a better understanding of what's going on at the moment. Obviously, they've got the Moblan asset, they've got the NAL, the North American Lithium asset as well, which they're ramping up at the moment. And just to remind the money miners, that's a 75% ownership that they have, and Piedmont Lithium has the other 25%. So how about we just had a bit of a chat about what's going on at North American Lithium?
Yeah, so like North American Lithium, this is the project that they've recently restarted, right? And it's also the project that they, you know, recently ran into some ramp up issues at, and they surprised the market with this big $200 million raise 3 weeks ago, and provided like very little in the way of actually, you know, letting shareholders know how ramp up progress was going. In the entire investor presentation, only half a slide in the presentation actually addressed like how ramp up was going, and bizarrely, you know, one of the points on that half slide actually mentioned like an iron level target during ramp up. So I just think there's like a lot that we don't know about how ramp up is going there. And, you know, investors are fairly wanting more information there, because this asset has twice before led to distress situations with its owners during ramp up, which became prolonged in both instances. And that's how Sayona ended up with it in the first place.
Yeah, it's with good reason to sort of always question, not being specific to Sayona here, but question the ramp up. And as an investor, as an owner of the business, want a lot of information. You know, the construction phase, development that is, and the ramp up phase, notoriously hard for companies, and especially with an asset that has put, you know, companies in the past into whatever liquidation or administration. You really want to know what's going on, don't you?
Absolutely, mate. So Sayona, they've been producing concentrate at NAL since March now, but they haven't provided any guidance on what price they're going to receive for that product. And like the question I validly have is why not? You've got the product now. Surely it's not that hard to test the product and have off-takers, buyers of this product, run their tests and give you some numbers around economics that they would pay for it. You can enter other off-take agreements for quantity of it now you're actually producing. So I just like you've got the product now. Surely that's something that can just relieve the market a little bit when there's some ramp up issues there. So I'd love to see some more guidance around that. And it's just like there's one more overarching point, JD, that I want to draw your attention to. This one, it's in relation to an EGM, so an extraordinary general meeting being held next month on the 17th of July. The notice of meeting for that went out last week, and there's some interesting resolutions being put to shareholders there. Namely, shareholders, they're being asked to approve a once-off issue of 10 million shares to the MD, Brett Lynch, the rationale being for past achievements that he was not properly remunerated for.
Interesting. So they're not performance rights or options?
No, and it's not like they vest over time. They're just shares up front.
Okay, so when I think of alignment in a company that I want to invest in, obviously you want directors, management, executives to hold stock in the company. That aligns the interests with you coming in as a shareholder. The other thing I'm sort of kind of keenly aware of is at what price did those shareholders, those directors rather, and management and CEOs and so on, get that stock or buy that stock at? Because that also ties to your alignment. So it's kind of interesting to see in this case that, price, their average price is zero.
The wording's curious too. So this is the wording in the notice of meeting. The board accepts that its decision to make a one-off award of shares to Mr. Lynch is not aligned with leading practice. However, given the performance outcomes, it was of the view that the grant is appropriate and completely aligned with key strategic outcomes and shareholder value. Very fascinating wording, I think, JD.
Agreed. And it's going to go to a vote.
And so you look at the shareholders, right? And they've got a big retail shareholder base. And I think that shareholder base is becoming a little bit increasingly disenfranchised with how they've been updated. They had a surprise equity raise hit on them. Now they're being asked to give out these freebie shares to management. If I were a shareholder, mate, I'd be demanding a lot more colour on how things are going at North American Lithium before the MD gets gifted any freebie shares. And with that North American Lithium, like the big overhang there that I didn't speak about is the fact that they have this offtake arrangement with Piedmont. And you look at that offtake arrangement. So, Piedmont, they get the greater of 113,000 tonnes or 50% of concentrate produced based upon a certain pricing that has a maximum price of $900 per tonne. So they're probably on the OPEX at their experience, anything going to Piedmont doesn't look like it's going to be making money, just sort of given some of the numbers being flushed out at the moment. So the real question is, what price are they going to get for the product not going to Piedmont? And are there any, product spec issues with the product to go to Piedmont? But those are just the big overhangs in my mind that you just really want to see answered, especially before the MD gets 10 million free shares valued at $1.8 million right now.
Yeah. So hopefully the quarterly that we'll see in July has a bit more color. I'm not sure if we're going to get another update prior to then.
Well, they might put out that quarterly after the vote.
Yeah, that's true. So that could be a while. Why don't we move on to Adriatic?
Our favorite developer.
Yeah. So we're quite big fans, I'd say. We like what's going on with this polymetallic asset in Bosnia. We've covered it once or twice. We've spoken with Matt Hines and Paul Cronin, the COO and CEO. And it's good to sort of see it all come together there. They've got a bit of construction still risk still remaining. And then, of course, you'll have the ramp up risk as a shareholder after that. So just to run listeners through what's going on and what was covered in the update today, they provide an update on the declines. They're building two declines into the ore body there. They also reaffirmed that first concentrate is expected in November. So in the last quarterly report, this got pushed back by 5 or so weeks. And when the debt financing was arranged early last year, this was initially expected to be Q2, so the quarter we're in currently. So it's been pushed back slightly. In terms of financing, the project is coming together for a capex of 182 million US, and all the figures we're going to talk about are US here. That comes in at 8% higher than the 168 million. And, you know, just on the surface, given the inflationary cost environment we've been in over the past couple of years, that's pretty impressive, don't you think?
Super impressive, mate.
So on the debt side of things, investors can see in their latest quarterly that once they're fully drawn, which they will be by the end of next quarter, they'll have 162 million in debt. But once you dig into it in a bit of detail, they've got 22.5 million is a copper stream. And just to remind the money miners what that is they've essentially got money up front and agreed to give their copper to Orion at just a highly discounted price. I'm sure if you dig into the details, I looked and it's pretty actually hard to find, but relating it to CSA Mine, the SPAC we covered.
They also got financing with Orion.
Yep, and that was also in a stream, and they were selling it at 4% of the copper price. So a super, super discounted price. Yeah. And you're just getting that money up front, and it's part of the debt financing to build the mine. As well, they've got 20 million, which is a con note. So expect that with Queens Road Capital to become stock at a later date. So 120 million US debt once they are done and dusted there. And from November, once they start producing concentrate, we'll see them earn revenue and start chipping away at that debt total.
We love it, mate. There are, I saw some photos in the announcement on this one. And this one's even more beautiful than the photos of the Rio Tinto copper mine. It's stunning.
Mate, we're going to put in the show notes a link. They did a sort of drone flying over video in Bosnia where the mine is, and it's just beautiful. It's stunning. We definitely need to go out for a site visit at some time. A couple other highlights.
Happy to be flown over. Yeah.
Yeah, if we can get the tickets chucked in as well, that'd be great.
We'll have a few nights in Dubrovnik along the way. What do you reckon?
Yeah, absolutely. A couple other details I wanted to touch on. So Ramp Up is expected to be, you know, running at nameplate capacity by April of next year. So that's roughly a 6-month ramp up phase. And they're going to be putting through 800,000 tons of ore through the mill once they're fully up and running. Other things like the railhead refurbishment and getting the deals done with the port still need to be all signed off. So expecting this month or maybe next month for that all to come together. And yeah, they're just sort of those final details in getting the project all up and running. And they're building a haul road from the mine to the processing plant. And it's not a super short distance. It's almost 25 kilometers. So they need to obviously finish that. So last sort of things, expecting a resource next month. So eyes are sort of peeled for what's going on there. There was one other detail we saw at the bottom. They listed their corporate broker. So
a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too sure what to draw into that, but it's kind of interesting to have the names of three different brokers at the bottom of your report. And
don't say that every day, mate.
No. One other thing I'll mention, if investors are interested in the company and they look into it, this is a company that is listed in Australia, listed in on the London Stock Exchange, as well as a listing in North America. So if you just do a quick Google search, the market cap you get isn't right. So that's to do with the thing being a CDI here. You can just do a quick search and search ADT.ASX and then compare that to ADT1 on the London Stock Exchange. Mm. And it's a different number, the market cap. So yeah. Just something to be aware of.
Always go to the Appendix 2As. That are lodged on the ASX and you can figure out the real number of shares on issue from there.
Absolutely. That's a wrap, mate.
Hoodaroo.
Another day without Maddie.
Hoodaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.